So we are holding three lines from the end of Kuf Lamed Ches Amud Beis. We started learning yesterday a statement of Rav Asida Torah Shetishtakach Mi Yisrael. There's going to come a point in the future when the Torah is going to be forgotten by the Jewish people. Chas v'shalom. We talked about a couple of angles on that. One of them was actually I mentioned this yesterday in the name of Reb Tzadik. It's actually in the name. It's actually from his Rebbe, the Mea Shiloyach, the Ishbitzer. Anyway, that there's a positive thing in it, meaning that people aren't going to know specifically things in Torah, but that they'll instinctively follow what Hashem says. But on the surface, at least, the Gemara is saying about how Torah or details of Torah are going to be forgotten, and we got into a whole discussion about what exactly is and isn't going to be forgotten. So now continuing on that topic, Tanya, Reb Shimon ben Yochai, Chas v'shalom shetishtakach Torah miYisrael. Chas v'shalom that Torah should ever be forgotten by the Jewish people. Shenema, as the pasuk says in Parashas Vayelech, Ki loisi shachach mipi zarei. It, the Torah, will never be forgotten by the descendants of the Jewish people. So okay, Rav would say maybe that that's talking about specifically the Shira of Hazinu, but Reb Shimon ben Yochai is saying that no, it means the Torah as a whole. There's an interesting vote, by the way, from Rav Nachman Breslover that says the ends of the words ki loy si shachach mi pi zaroi yud aleph ches yud and vav rearranged spell yoichoi as in the name of the father of Reb Shimon by Yoichoi. So we're saying in the schos of Reb Shimon and what he accomplished, the Torah will never be forgotten by the Jewish people. So Elamani Makaim Yeshotu Lavakash Hashem Velayim So. Now, in connection with that, yesterday we quoted a line from a pasuk that said that people are going to be wandering around throughout the whole world to look for the word of Hashem, and they're not going to find it. We said one meaning of the word of Hashem, Dvar Hashem Zu Halacha. So if you're saying that the Torah will never be forgotten, says Reb Shimon, then what does that mean? Means shlo yimtzu halacha brura or mishnah brura b'makom echad. There won't be any place where you're going to be able to find a clear halacha, meaning that everybody understands the reasons for the halacha and they don't argue about it, or a clear mishnah that there's not a machloikas in what the wording of the mishnah should be. You're not going to be able to find that. So there's going to be a tremendous amount of machloikas about the details of any particular mishnah or any particular halacha. But the Torah as a whole will not be forgotten by the Jewish people. So we said yesterday, Rabbi Yaakov Emden points out, nowadays we have that. There's so many Sfarim out there, and every Sefer is looking for, and every Sefer, every author of a Sefer, after all, is looking for some kind of Chiddush. So you wind up with many different ways of understanding what the Torah is saying. On the other hand, the Ben Yehoyada says there is, as usual, you know, we find a positive angle in that as well. It means, therefore, now there's much more to work on, there's much more to learn, and much more to heart of it in learning Torah and understanding it. Top of Kuf Lamed Ches Amud Beis, Omer Aleph rather. Okay, more on this topic. Tanya, Rab Yosi ben Elisha, Imra Isa Dursh Tzores Rabbis Bois Olav. If you see a generation where many Tzores are coming upon them, say Uvdoik B'Dayonim Yisrael. Go and check what the Dayonim of the Jewish people are doing and see whether they're on the up and up. Shekol Per Onus Shabal La'Olam Leibba El Rishvil Dayonim Yisrael. Whenever there's trouble, whenever there's punishment that comes to the world, it's always because the dayanim of the Jewish people are doing the wrong thing. Chenema, as you find a pasuk in the Navi Micha, Shimu na zois Rosh Beis Yaakov, he says, listen to this, heads of the family of Yaakov, Uktzinei Beis Yisrael, and the leaders, Katzin is a word for a leader, of the house of Yisrael, Hamasavim Mishpat, who find doing Mishpat, doing justice disgusting, or who make justice disgusting, the Eis Kal Yashara Yaakeshu, and everything that's supposed to be straight, they make crooked, Boinat Tziyan Bedomim, they build Tziyan with blood, B'Yerushalayim Ba'avla, and they build Yerushalayim with injustice, Rosheha B'Sheichad Yishpoitu, the heads of the Jewish people are judging using bribes, B'Chayaneh B'Mchiria, you know, the Koyanim who are supposed to be teaching people Torah are teaching it only for a fee. They'll only teach a person Torah if they're paid for it. And maybe it also means that if they're paid, then they'll say whatever, then they'll change the din to fit whatever the person wants. Unvi'er b'kesef yiksayim, or the Nevi'im, not the real Nevi'im, we mean the fake Nevi'im, are doing magic, kesem, means magic, for money. In other words, the same idea. In other words, the people will pay them, and they'll say whatever, they'll come up with whatever Nevu'ah they feel like. And the pasuk continues, v'al Hashem yisha'enu v'goymer, and they trust in Hashem, they rely on Hashem, saying nothing bad is going to happen to us. You have a mentality that you find in many places in Nevi'im where people took the view, you know what, listen, okay, so what, we're doing Averus, but we have Hashem's Shechina is by us, the Beis Hamikdash is by us, and therefore nothing bad can happen to us. Yirmiyahu in his times has to deal with that kind of thing. Micha over here is dealing, a number of Nevi'im had to deal with that kind of mentality. So the point is that we're focusing on the fact that they're judging wrongly and they're judging with sheichad and so forth. So the Gemara points out, Rishoyim Haim, what happened over here? These people are Rishoyim, El Shatolo Bitchoinim Mamisha Amavahaya Olam. They're still trusting in Hashem. Al Derech, like the famous expression in Brachas, Ganva Pumachta to Rachmonakau, you're right, that even the thief calls on Hashem as he's about to break into the house. So these people, they're doing Averus, but they're not denying Hashem. They're saying that they're saying, but Hashem will still protect us. They don't realize Fakir. The problem is, so we know that the Shechina is there when Dayanim judge rightly, or the Kimnitza Badas Kael. The flip side is also true. Bad Dayanim cause the Shechina to go away from the Jewish people, and that's what brings the troubles. So they don't realize that, and therefore they think that we can be judging wrongly, and Hashem's Shechina will still be with us and will still be protected. So the Ficha, what?
Why?
Yeah, what's the question?
Why can't you say that the Shechina goes away and the Dayanim don't judge us very well because of the Averis of the Jewish people? Why does it have to be the other way around?
I suppose it's possible. You could say the Dayanim are judging badly because of the Averis of the Jewish people, but usually these things go from the top down. Usually you have, it starts at the top and works its way down. So if the judges are doing the wrong thing, that tends to lead the other way around. The people say to themselves then, okay, in that case, the Dayanim are doing wrongly. In that case, you know, if the Dayanim and Rabbanim and whatever are doing such and such, then surely we're allowed to. Yeah, you're right. I suppose it could happen the other way around. But even then the Dayanim were saying are still responsible because they're responsible. Okay, if the people are going the wrong way, it's their responsibility to not follow them, but rather to do the right thing. You know, there's the famous expression, I think it's brought from Rabbi Cyril Salanter, you know, when it says before Mashiach comes, Pnei Adurk, Pnei Akelev, I think we've talked about this before, that says the face of the generation will be like the face of a dog. So there's a vote from Rabbi Cyril that says what happens when you see a person walking a dog, the dog runs ahead. And if you didn't know better, you would think the dog is deciding where to go and the master is going along. But every so often, the dog turns around to look at the master where he wants to go and then starts going in that direction. So the same way Rabbi Cyril said, that, you know, you're going to have a certain kind of quote-unquote leader who, instead of actually leading the people, is always constantly turning around to see what they want and then pretending to lead them in that direction where really he's a follower, not a leader. So we're saying that the Dayanim are not supposed to be that way. Anyway, let's continue.
That's a very important point. I personally think that there's both together. The Averis...
There can be both together, but here we're focusing on what the Dayanim are doing wrong. Maybe the idea is also, if the people are doing wrong, but at least the Dayanim are still doing good, then there's at least still a chance. Fine, the Dayanim can eventually manage to get the people back on the right track. But if the Dayanim are doing wrong, then where are you going to go from there? Anyway, continues the Gemara. L'fichach maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu alein gimel poronius. Therefore, because they did three things wrong, connected gimel averus shebiyadam, because they did three things wrong. We're saying what the heads did, what the kohenim did, and what the nevi'im did. So three wrong things, that they're taking sheichad, that they're taking payments to teach Torah, and that they're taking payments to say false nevuah. So three bad things. Therefore, Hashem brings on them three punishments corresponding to the three averus. Shenema, the next pasuk continues. Lochein beglalchem tzion soda techoresh. Therefore, because of you, tzion will be plowed up like a field, as we know happened after the second korban. That's one of the things that we commemorate on Shiva. One of the things that we commemorate on Tisha B'Av is v'nech v'shahir, that after the second korban, they plowed up the city of Yerushalayim. One of the five things that it says in the Mishnah happen on Tisha B'Av is you have the Meraglim, you have the two destructed, the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed twice, you have Beitar was destroyed, and you have Venech Shahir, that the city of Yerushalayim was plowed up. Plowed it up. They took a plow to the soil and plowed it up in order like there should be no remnant left of Yerushalayim. The Romans did that. Maybe it was only the Beis Hamikdash area, maybe it was Yerushalayim as a whole, I don't know. I mean, yeah, okay, yeah. So that's one. See in Sadat Chodesh. Number two, Yerushalayim Eintia. Yerushalayim will be heaps of ruins. The Harabayis, Levomais Yair, and the Harabayis will become a high place, which is a forest, because trees will grow over there, because it'll be abandoned. So three things. Marsha points out, though, there are some positive angles on this. First of all, what we're saying is, by rights, if they were perverting justice like that, what do you mean? They should have been, by rights, they should have just been completely destroyed like Sodom. Sodom was completely overturned. Isn't that what should have happened? We say, you know, in this coming week's after of Shabbos Chazon, Lulei Hashem Hoysulano Sored Kimot, Ki Sodom Hoyinu. But the vort is, Marsha says, because after all, they did have the positive thing. We just said that they did trust in Hashem. Therefore, they just got severely punished, but not completely wiped out. He says also, you have even the expression Tzion Sada Techoresh, there's a positive angle on it. It means that Tzion, Yerushalayim as a whole, or the Beis Mikdash specifically, or whatever, has been made into a Sada. It's a horrible thing. But on the other hand, when you think about it, a Sada is a place where you plant. It's a field where you plant. So in other words, it's representing the idea. It's not a destruction forever. There is a planting over there, and eventually the Geula will grow from that. Yeah. And the Maharal, by the way, makes a connection specifically between these three things and the three Averis that we're saying. We're saying there was a problem with justice, with teaching Torah, and with Nevuah, and each of these things corresponds to one of those things. Yerushalayim is the place of Nevi'im. Most of the Nevi'im, it says, came from Yerushalayim. The Beis Hamikdash is the place of teaching Torah because the Sanhedrin sat there, and so forth, and therefore it corresponds. The Eina Kadosh Baruch Hu Mashra Shchinase Al Yisrael Ad Yichlu Shoftim B'Shoytu Roy Yisrael. The Hashem will not make His Shchina rest on the Jewish people until the bad judges and the bad Shoytrim, means bailiffs, meaning the one who actually carry out the judgments of the Beis Din, are gone from the Jewish people. Only then will Hashem rest His Shechina on the Jewish people. Shenema, as it says in the Pasuk, at the end of this week's Haftarah. Va'ashiva yodi alayich, Hashem says, I will stretch out my hand again against you. Ve'etzrif kabor sigoyich, I will refine out, like you refine out with soap, all of your sigim, all of your dross, all of your garbage, basically. Sigim literally means like when you have, for example, metal. You have a mixture of different kinds of metal, and you put it into the melting pot in order to melt it down and refine it. What gets burnt off, what gets removed from the mixture is called sigim. So we're saying, Hashem is saying, I'm going to remove all those sigim from you, like as if you're cleaning something with soap. Va'asira kol bedilayich, I will remove all of your bedilayich. Again, the simple meaning of bedilayich means like your tin, like a common metal, like tin that's mixed in with the good silver and gold or whatever. But Rashi explains over here that also the word sigoyich also is really, as we're going to see soon in the Gemara, is related to the word gase haruach, sigim gasim. It's the same letters rearranged. So it means the gase haruach. Also, Rashi explains, you have a word yiske ma'od, which means to increase greatly. So the word sigoyich can be seen as related to that. And bidiloyich means people who separate between Hashem and the Jewish people. So we're saying that Hashem is going to remove all of those. V'ashiva sheftayich kvar yishayna. Then Hashem continues, I'll restore your judges like they used to be. V'yayatzayich kvar tchila, and your advisors like they were at the beginning. And then the pasuk continues, then there'll be the geula, then there'll be the geula, and achri ken yikari loch irat tzedek. So we see that as long as the bad shoftim and shoytrim are around, then that can happen. They have to be out of the way in order for the geula to happen, in order for the shechina to rest on the Jewish people again. Omar Ula, so Ula says in this connection, "Ein Yerushalayim nifte ela b'tzedakah." Yerushalayim will be redeemed only with tzedakah. Or on the side of it here, it brings the famous thing. We always grow up with the expression "Ein Yisrael nigalon ela b'tzedakah." That's the Rambam. That's apparently the Rambam's girsa. Because the Rambam writes in Hilchos Tzedakah, the expression "Ein Yisrael nigalon ela b'tzedakah." Although since you have, it's not only Yisrael, but whereas here it says Yerushalayim and Niftin instead of nigalon, there's a footnote in a letter from the Rebbe where he points out maybe it's not that Rambam had a different girsa, maybe the Rambam is just rewriting, where it's just rewriting in his own words what it's saying over here in the Gemara. Anyway, whatever it is, Yerushalayim or the Jewish people are redeemed only through Tzedakah. Shenema, the last pasuk I've heard, Tzion Mishpat Tipada. Tzion will be redeemed through judgment, v'shaveh al b'tzedakah, and those who return to it will be redeemed through tzedakah. Actually, Marsha points out, so what does that mean? It means that you're saying they're going to be, that Tzion itself, which is Yerushalayim, is going to be saved through Mishpat, through justice, not through Tzedakah. So what are you saying? Ein Yerushalayim nifta ela b'tzedakah. So he explains that what the Pasuk means is Tzion b'mishpat, it's not two separate things. Tzion b'mishpat means the Mishpat that is supposed to be in Tzion. We said before that the Torah is going to be forgotten, or it's not going to be clear what the halacha is, and you're going to be wandering from one place to another trying to find what the halacha is. So what is going to restore that Mishpat, what's going to restore that we have a clear understanding of Torah, is v'shaveh b'tzedakah, through doing tzedakah. So that's what we mean by saying that Yerushalayim and the Jewish people will be saved through tzedakah. They were right. Amar Papa. So the Papa says in this connection, since we're talking about the effect of the bad dayanim, and since we're talking about this pasuk the etzrif kabor sigoich, so the Papa says, whenever you have, we said before in general that when troubles come to the Jewish people, it's because of the Dayanim. So now Rapapa is going to point out you have similar kinds of links like that also between the Goyim who harass us and the things that we're doing, that we're not doing right. So I batli yehiri, if the Jews who act proudly are gone, batli amgushi, then the amgushi will be gone. Now what are yehiri? Rashi over here explains it means that you have Jews who wear goyish styles and fancy clothing or whatever and pretend to be like the goyim, pretend to be like rich important people or whatever like the goyim. So that's Yehiri. Amgushi, meanwhile, Rashi says, are the goyim who try to missionize to us, who try to convert us to their religions or whatever. So therefore, there's a connection. When you don't have Jews who are acting like the goyim, then we won't be harassed by these missionaries who are trying to bother us and convert us. Different explanation is also that the word yehiri also on the symbol meaning just means people who are proud. And in fact, this Gemara is also in Sanhedrin, and Rashi over there just explains it means gasei ruach mi Yisrael, just means people who are proud. And Rashi uses the expression over there that amgushi are Persian priests or whatever who harass the Jewish people. So then it's a more general thing that you have where the Gemara tells us that a pride is like avodah zarah, a gasei haruach, or like ovdei avodah zarah, because they take away the shechina from the world. So therefore, again, we're saying that there's a connection. When you don't have people who are proud and acting proud and whatever, then you don't have these ovdei avodah zarah, these goyish priests who harass the Jewish people. And e batli dayoni batli gzirpati. And if the bad dayonim are gone from the Jewish people, as we said, the dayonim who judge wrongly, then the Jewish people will be free of the gzirpati, which means it actually says goyish police who harass them. So the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Rashi uses the expression shoftim akum hachoftim es Yisrael b'maklas, goyish judges or police or whatever who beat the Jewish people with sticks. Yeah. So what's the connection? Where do we see these connections in the Pesukim? I batli yehiri batli amgushi. We're saying if the proud people or the ones who act proudly like the goyim or whatever are gone, then the amgushi will be gone. Dichtiv etzrif kabor sigoyich. Because as the pasuk that we just quoted says, I will clean up your dross, your light with soap. So we said. Rashi says the word sigoyich means the gasei haruach, the people who act proudly and pretend to be greater than they are. Because the word sigim therefore is related to the word yiskem oid, which means we'll become very great. So and one spelled with a samach and one spelled with a sin, but they sound the same. So that's yisger would be sogar. We need to close up yisger with a samach. The sig with a samach means dross, means impurities. Impurities, that's the word for it. Like we have like in Tilim in Kapitel Kuf Yud Tes, Sigim Hishbata Kol Rishei Oretz. And then what do you call it? Yiske Ma'od. Like you have Ke'eras Balavon and Yiske, I mean with a sin, it means to grow greater. So therefore, but they sound the same. So the Gemara is making a connection between them, that when the Sigim, meaning the ones who are making themselves greater, are gone, then the Pasuk continues, then as the pasuk continues, va'asir kol bedil loyich, Hashem says, I'll remove all your bedil. The word bedil, we're darshaning, means those who are mavdilin, those who separate the Jewish people from Hashem, namely these missionaries who are trying to who are lying and trying to convince us to abandon Yiddishkeit. So that's the connection between the Yehirim and the Amgushim. And Ibatli Daini Batli Gzirpati, and we're saying if the bad Dayanim, the ones who pervert justice, are gone, then the Gzirpati, the Goyisha authorities and police and whatever who harass us, will be gone. A dichtiv, because you have a different pasuk. Heser Hashem Mishpatayich Pina Oivich. The pasuk says Hashem has removed your judgments. He took away your enemies. So we see it in Mishpatayich. In other words, means the ones that are your judgments, not Hashem's judgments, because they're not judging rightly. When those are gone, then Pina Oivich, and your enemies go away, and they don't harass you anymore. So when I don't understand. No, fakert. What we're saying over here, the missionaries come around because of the Yehirim, because you have people in general who are gasei haruach, or specifically Rashi says over here, they show their gasei haruach by pretending, by acting, by dressing, and behaving and whatever, like the rich goyim. Yeah. Okay. More in this connection, Omer of Milai Mishum Rav Elazar Rav Shimon, my dichtiv shavar Hashem mati rishoyim shevet moshlim. The posik, in context, this posik in Yeshaya is talking about the downfall of Bavel. But we're going to douche in it in a different sense, that it's talking about what's going on among the Jewish people. Again, Maharsha says the connection is because we said when are the goyim able to harass us and cause us trouble or whatever, is when we're not where we should be. So there's a connection over here between you. So what does it mean? Shavar Hashem Mati Rishoyim. Hashem breaks the stick of the Rishoyim. What is the stick? Elo Hadayonin Shenasu Makel Lachazanehim. This refers to dayanim who become a stick for their chazanim. A chazan in Gemara terminology is more like what we would call a shamash nowadays. The point is, in other words, Rashi says, let's say you have, for example, the shamash, for example, will say, if you don't pay me more or whatever, then I'm going on strike. I'm not going to summon such and such a person to Beis Din, which is one of the shamash's jobs, or I'm not going to punish this person if he's supposed to be. And the dayan, instead of telling him, listen, you do your job or you get fired, says, okay, you know what, fine, we'll increase your salary at the expense of the tzibur. So the dayan is becoming a support and a stick for the chazan, for the shamash, right? So that's the mati rishoyim. Shevet moshlim. What does it mean? The stick of the rulers. Elo tamar chachamim should mishpachos adayonim. This refers to the tamar chachamim who belong to the families of the judges. Because what happens? You have again dayonim who are rishoyim. Meanwhile, what happens is, since they have Tamanei Chachamim, who are relatives of them, of theirs, so the Tamanei Chachamim stick up for them. They try to hide or paper over or whatever, to what these bad Dayanim are doing, and try to find plausible sounding excuses for what the Dayanim are doing. And since they're Tamanei Chachamim, well, you know, people listen to what they say, and therefore people are misled into thinking that the Dayanim are doing the right thing when they're not. Mazutra says a little bit different, not necessarily even from the families. Elu Tamar Chachamim Shemalamdim Hilchus Tzibur L'dayone Bur. Refers to the Tamar Chachamim who teach Hilchus Tzibur to uneducated judges. Meaning, so Rashi over here doesn't give a lot of detail. He just says it means that those Tamar Chachamim figure we can set up these Dayanim, even though they don't know a lot, and they'll ask us whenever they need something, and in the end they don't ask. So the implication seems to be that Hilchus Tzibur then means that they're teaching them like general principles of halacha, but not the specifics. So a Tamar Chacham will teach a person the general things of what's involved in being a dayan. He won't get into the specifics. He won't get into the individual si'ifim in Shulchan Aruch or shachs or smez or whatever. And figures, you know what? Listen, okay, so the guy is at least going to know in general that there's an issue over here. And when he has a specific case, he'll come and ask me. Meanwhile, they don't come and ask, and they make up halacha themselves. A different way of understanding it also, I think Maharal says, is that Hilchus Tzibur means not so much halachas, but practical things, how to run a tzibur. So you need, it's true, a dayan needs to know such things, needs to know how to do community relations and all, but not, they can't only know that, they also have to know what the relevant halachas are. So if you teach them only Hilchus Tzibur, you're making them into a very good politician, but you're not teaching them what the halachas are, and therefore you have a problem because then they just make things up as they go along. Amar of Elazar and Milai Mishum Rishlokish, my dichtiv, what does it mean, another pasuk regarding this matter, a pasuk in Yeshaya, ki kapechem negoyalu badam, because Hashem is saying there's going to be punishments coming because your hands are filthy with blood. The etzba is sechem ba'oven, and your fingers are dirty with averus. Sifse sechem dibru shaker. Your mouth, your lips have spoken falsehood. Lashonchem avlotege. Your lips speak injustice. You have four different things over here. So it refers to four different groups. Ki kapechem negoil abadam. It says your hands are filthy with blood. Elu adayonim. That refers to the dayonim who are judging wrongly. In particular, so why are we mentioning in connection with their hands? Rashi says because they stretch out their hands to take sheichad, and what happens is in the end they judge the din wrongly, and therefore they cause, for example, Reuven having to pay Shimon where he shouldn't have had to. So they're taking away money from Reuven. Now the Gemara tells us at the end of Bava Kamma that if a person judges wrongly and causes somebody to pay when he doesn't have to, ke'ilu noitolos nishmasim, in manner, it's as if he's taking away his neshama. So therefore we're saying they're guilty of bloodshed. The etzba is seichem ba'oven. The pasuk continues, your fingers are dirty with averus. Elu sofrei dayanim. This refers to the scribes of such dayanim, where they write false shtaris. So they're using their fingers to write shtaris that they know to be false. Sifse seichem dibru shaker. When it says your lips have spoken falsehood, elu orchei dayanim. This refers to the orchei dayanim, the lawyers who teach people. To teach people false claims. Yavin Pirkei Avos, right? Altas Atzmacha Ka'urcha Dayanim. The Dayan also has to be very careful not to lead on the person and teach him what to say and what not to say. You do have the Rambam rights, for example. Sometimes you can have, let's say, a person comes to Beis Din and like he's so frustrated or whatever that you know what he's trying to say, but he can't get the words out properly. So then the Dayan can like help him out a little bit, like, you know, maybe start a sentence for him or whatever so that he can, but you have to be very careful not to do it as Urcha Dayanim. But so you have, sometimes you have actual Urcha Dayanim and they teach people to make all kinds of false claims. And look, I mean, we know in the Gemara, there's all kinds of things. For example, a person can have a migui, a person can have a this or that, you know, So you can easily have, a crooked lawyer who knows halacha can use this kind of information. Don't claim such and such, because Beis Din is not going to believe you claim such and such falsely, and you'll get away with it with a migui, that kind of thing. Yeah. And then when the pasuk finishes off, your tongue speaks injustice. Elu ba'alei dinin. That means the actual litigants themselves, where a person comes to Beis Din and makes a false claim and makes a claim against the other guy, which he knows to be false. Well, not that was the lawyer with the previous one. That was Urcha Dayanim. Here we're talking about the Baal Din himself. Reuven, for example, claims that Shimon owes him money. So let's say Reuven himself, even without a lawyer, goes and makes a false claim against Shimon. Let's say, for example, he claims more than the amount is supposed to be in order that then Shimon is going to be a motive of mixtus and have to swear, would be one example. There can be many such examples where a person makes a claim which he knows to be false, figuring that then he can get something out of it. So the pasuk is criticizing all four groups: the dayanim, the sofrim, the lawyers, and the actual balei dinim, if they do the wrong thing. That's that we're talking about. The geula will come only when this is taken care of. We've been mentioning a few different things that Rab Meloi or Rab Elazar Rab Meloi had said. So now we're going to mention another one, even though it's not directly connected to what we said, at least on the surface, to what we said before. From the day that Yosef separated from his brothers, meaning when he was sold by them, Loi Tam Tam Yain, he did not taste the taste of wine. As the pasuk says, Yaakov benches him. Yaakov says the brachas should go onto the head of the nazir of his brothers. So we see, in other words, that Yosef is called a nazir because he's separated from drinking wine. That's the next thing the Gemara is going to say. Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Chanina, Omar, Afhein Laitam Otam Yain. Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Chanina says, it wasn't just Yosef, the brothers also stopped drinking wine. Dichti Vayishtu Vayishkuru Imay, because the Pasuk says afterwards, by the banquet that they had near the end of Parashas Miketz, and says they drank and became drunk with him. Miklal da'ad ha'idna loi, meaning that up until this point, this is the first time when they were drinking. The idoch, the first opinion of Malai would say, shichus who do I have a shsiya miyahaba. No, it just means this is the first time in all those years that they got drunk. They got drunk. But up until that point, they had drunk wine, whereas according to that opinion, Yosef had never drunk wine all those years. One idea is, because of Tsar, that of his father and whatever. Another idea is, And after all, the sale of Yosef happened in connection with a meal. Vayeshvu lecha lochem. It says they sat down to eat, and then they saw the Yishma'elim over there and sold Yosef to them. So like Yosef took the view, or according to the second opinion, according to Rabbi Yosef Chanina, the brothers took the view, such a terrible thing happened as a result of drinking, therefore let's stop. And another idea is Yosef himself in particular is in Mitzrayim Ervas Aretz, and therefore, you know, as you have the famous thing that the person sees a sota, then the person sees a sota as degradation, he should stop drinking wine, he should become a nazir temporarily. So the same thing, Yosef is in such an immoral environment, so he has to be extra careful. Marsha points out, actually, now it's one thing you could say, fine, after the brothers found out who Yosef was, then okay, they're able to drink again. But here this banquet is before they knew who Yosef was. If we're saying according to Rabbi Yosef of Chanina that all those years they didn't drink, how come all of a sudden they are? And he says because they had no choice because of Emas Hamalchus. Because after all, as far as they knew at this point, Yosef is, they don't know who he is. He's Tzofnas Paneach, the viceroy of Mitzrayim. If he's telling you to drink, then you got no choice. You got to be Matir Neder, and you got to be Matir Neder and drink. I once saw an explanation, and I can't remember the source of it, that the vote was, so the brothers hadn't drunk all these years, again, because it's part of doing tshuva for having sold Yosef. But now they saw, just before that, it says in the Psukim, that Yosef gave extra portions of food to Binyamin. And they realized by themselves that they're not jealous of Binyamin the way they had been jealous of Yosef all those years before. So now they realize to themselves, you know what, we've completely cleaned up that Avera. Now we've completely done tshuva, therefore we're able to drink again. I saw that vote many years ago. I don't remember the marker. Okay. Anyway. V'amar of Malai, also Rav Malai says another thing. B'schar v'rocha v'samach b'libay zoch l'choshen ha'mishpat al-libay. We find when Hashem is going to send Moshe to take the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim, so Moshe argues, among other things, that instead you should send Aaron. Aaron's been the Navi all these years. In fact, you have Psukim, you have a Pasuk in Yechezkel that says that while the Jewish people were in Mitzrayim, Hashem sent them a Navi and told them stop worshipping Avodah Zarah. And Rashi over there says, brings from the Medrash, that was Aaron. So Aaron was already the known, was already the established Navi. So Moshe says, how can I go? I'm gonna take over from him. He's gonna be jealous. I'm Doch his younger brother. And Hashem says, don't you worry, Virocha Basamach Baliba, he's gonna see you and he's gonna be completely happy in his heart. He's not gonna be jealous of you at all. In the schus of that, he had the schus that Aaron had the schus that he wore the Choshen HaMishpat on his heart. Okay. So this was all a piece of Agadah which we got into because we started with that Rami Bar Yechezkel and asked Rav Huna to send to him a couple of great things that Rav Huna had said in the name of Rav. Two of them regarding Hilchos Shabbos and one of them regarding the Torah, and that led us into this whole discussion. So now we're going to get back to the matter of we were talking about before about a kila, about a canopy over and around a bed, what the dinim are as far as putting it up on Shabbos. So we said yesterday there are a number of dinim involved. If it's the kind that slopes down to the sides, then you have some pretty strict rules about how wide it can be on the top and how wide it can be on the bottom, and so forth. If it's horizontal, then we said you can have then we said you can't even have 10 people spread it out. So some more dinim on that topic. We said there are ways where you're allowed to spread out a kila. We said if it has a string attached to it to be able to open it up. So if it was opened a tefach wide before Shabbos, actually I said it a little bit wrongly yesterday. What Tosfos gives two different explanations over there. One is that it's either there has to be a string or open a tefach. The other is that it has to be both. Okay. Anyway, the string accomplishes that now it's clear that you're doing it and that you're using it in order to open and close the kila, and therefore it looks much less like making an oil. When you have a string attached to it, then Rashi uses the expression "demosif al oil arayhu ve'in a koyis lachatchila." Then it's just you adding to a temporary tent. You're not making lachatchila because the fact that you have a string attached amounts to therefore that you already have part of the oil made. Horizontal means lying across lying along the top of the bed. So in other words, if you have the bed is over here, you have a canopy above it like that, horizontally going straight across and then hanging down the sides. Yeah. So we said if it was open a tefach before Shabbos, then you're allowed to. Again, Tosfos says that maybe what it is either you need to, maybe what it is either you need that as well as you also need it to be actually open a tefach and to have a string, or maybe not. Maybe having a string amounts to it's good enough even without the tefach. Okay. So now getting back to that topic of a kila, of a canopy. The people of Bashka, which is the name of a city, sent a message to Levi asking him, Levi, the Talmud of Rebbe, asking him three questions in halacha. Kila mahu, number one, what are the dinim about putting up a canopy around a bed on Shabbos? Kshusa b'karma mahu. Number two, if you have kshus growing in a vineyard, is that allowed? Kshus, Rashi describes, is a plant that's a parasitic plant that grows on certain thorn bushes. So like it doesn't have roots of its own or whatever, but there are two possibilities. One is that it's completely parasitic. It doesn't have roots of its own. It just takes nourishment from the plant that it's on. Or it could also be a plant that grows by itself, but then it leans on the thorn bush or whatever and not so much nourishment, but like to hold it up. Whatever it is, they're asking, this kshus is used, we find in many places in Gemara. They use it as an ingredient in beer. So the question was, if it grows in a vineyard, is there an isser involved? Because would it be kalayim, right? And number three, mes b'yomtiv mahu, what's the din? If you have a person who passed away and it's on yomtiv, are you allowed to bury him on yomtiv or not? So those were the three shaylas. What happened? Ad ozel, while the shliach was going with these three questions, noch nafshi de Levi, Levi passed away. So somebody has to answer the shaylas. Amar Shmuel of Menashe. So Shmuel says to one of his talmidim, Reb Menashe, Ichakimas, if you're smart enough to be able to give the answer, shalach lahu, then send them the answer. Since Levi can't send the answer anymore, then you do it instead. The shliach had come from Bashko to ask the shaylas. Meanwhile, Levi had passed away by the time he got there. So Shmuel is saying, listen, we have the shliach over here. He needs answers for the people of Bashka. Reb Menashe, look into it and give them answers. Sholach lahu. So he sent them back a message as follows. As far as the first question, kila, as far as the canopy, chazarnu al kol tzidei kila, we've looked over every possible angle on the question of a kila, v'lo motzinu lo tzad heter. We don't find a way to be matur it. It's also to spread out the canopy on Shabbos. What do you mean? We can't find any way. We said yesterday that you have Romi by Yechezkel's way. If you have a string attached, or according to Tosfos, maybe you also need it spread out of Tefach, fine. But you have a way of putting up a kila on Shabbos where there's no problem. So why is he telling them a blanket statement that you can't? The reason is, because the people of Bashker were not Bnei Torah, and they're not going to realize these kinds of differences. If you tell them there's a certain way that it's mutter, then they're going to start cutting corners and say, okay, but also in this case it's mutter, and also in that case, and pretty soon they're going to be over on actual drabanans or maybe even daraisas. So therefore, we say just cut it off, lachatchila, you can't do it, period. Number two, they asked about kshus b'karma. They had asked about this kshus plant in a vineyard. Is it kilayim? And he answers them, irbuva, it is kilayim, and you're not allowed to keep it over there. So again, the question is, why? The lishlach lohu kedid of tarfen. Why didn't he send them the message that the halacha is like Reb Tarfon? The Tanya, we learn in a braisa. Kishus, Reb Tarfon, Oma, Ein Kalayim B'Kerem. Reb Tarfon says that Kishus, which is the same as Kshusa, is not Kalayim in a vineyard. Rashi says, because it's actually considered, because it can be considered a tree. The general rule is Kalayim, Kalaya Kerem, only applies to grain or vegetables or beans or whatever that grow in a vineyard. It doesn't apply to a tree of a different species that grows in a vineyard. It's not a problem. So we're considering, so Rabbi Tarfon considers the kshus to be like a tree. Although Rabbi Yaakov Emden has a bit of a problem with that because he says, what do you mean? It's like a tree. It doesn't even have roots of its own. So maybe fakir, because it doesn't have roots of its own, then it just grows parasitically on the thorn bush. So therefore, maybe it's not considered a separate species. Whatever it is, anyway, Rabbi Tarfon says that. The chum say it is kalayim b'kerem. Now, of course, when you have yochid v'rab, malacha k'rabim, but the Kaimalon, we also have a general rule. Kol ha-meikol ba'oretz halacha k'moisi b'chutz la'aretz. Whenever you have a machlokas, when it comes to kilayim or orla, which are both mitzvahs atloyis ba'aretz, whenever you have a machlokas, what the din is, then always we say the halacha in chutz la'aretz is like the more lenient opinion. Because neither of those things, orla or kilayim kerem, applies midaraisa in chutz la'aretz. So in chutz la'aretz it's only drabanon, and in things drabanon you can be makel and go according to the more lenient opinion. Actually, there is an opinion that Urla is halacha l'moshe m'sinai in chutz la'aretz, but according to that opinion, I think Tosfos talks about it in Kedushin, then the vote would be part of the halacha l'moshe m'sinai is that when there's machlokas, you can be makel in chutz la'aretz. Whatever it is, the point is, so therefore, Reb Tarfon is the more lenient opinion. Bashka is outside Eretz Yisrael, so you should tell them the halacha is like Reb Tarfon. And again, the answer is, Lefisha ain't in Bnei Torah. Again, the problem is the people of Bashkar are not Bnei Torah, and if you matter them such a thing, then they're likely to start making exceptions and cutting corners in other cases as well. So the Gemara continues. So what is Taka the din about that? Machriz Rav. Rav in his area made an announcement. Hai man de boil mizra kshus b'karma. Anybody who wants to plant kshus in a vineyard, Lizra, can go ahead and do it. In other words, not only is it that if it's there, you don't have to remove it, you're allowed to even put it there lachatchila, because again, it's not kalayim b'karim. So obviously in Rav's area, they were b'nei Torah. So therefore, he didn't have the problem that we're having with the people of Bashkar. So therefore, he could tell them the actual halacha as it is. Mushrooms are a different example. I mean, I don't know if the same din would apply. That's true. Mushrooms don't have roots either, and they grow parasitically. And I guess in that sense, they could be similar to krus. I don't know, though. Lav dafka. I mean, you still find the Gemara in a number of places mentions that mushrooms don't grow from the ground at all. They get all their nourishment from the air. It never says that about krus, as far as I know. So even if krus is a parasitic plant and it doesn't have roots of its own, apparently the idea is it still gets nourishment from the ground. It just doesn't get it directly. It gets it through the plant that it's growing on. So it's not necessarily the same thing. But interesting point over here that we're saying, by the way, that in Rav's area, they were Tamar Chachamim, they were Bnei Torah, because you find a Gemara in Chulin that says that when Rav first came to Bavel, Bika Matzah, he found there was a wide open area where people are being careless with the halachas of Basa B'chalav, and he had to make a geder, he had to make a fence around the Torah and say that something which really is mutter, and to eat the udder of an animal, should be osir. So obviously, Rav, it worked, and over time, the people over there, Taka became Tamar Chachamim enough that now Rav can tell them the actual halacha and not worry that they're going to, so you can see how Rav really turned things around over there. Continues the Gemara. On the other hand, Rab Amram Chasida Mangid Allah Ilavei. On the other hand, Rab Amram Chasida, if he saw somebody planting kshus in a vineyard, he would give him malchus for it, because he held it's actually also daraisa. Yeah. Actually, Tosfos says maybe it's not that he held that it's all. Well, maybe he held that it's also daraisa, maybe not. Actually, Tosfos says in Rab Amram's area, apparently they weren't bnei Torah, so we're back to the problem with bnei Bashkar, and therefore he would give them malchus for it. Actually, Tosfos discusses over here a little bit. Technically, according to Rabbi Yoshia, where the halacha is like him, the halacha is technically a person is chayev for kalayim vakerem only if they plant two species together in a vineyard. For example, a person takes a wheat grain, a barley grain, and a grape seed and plants them all together. So we'd have to be talking about over here. It would mean that these people are planting not only kshus but something else as well at the same time. Rav Mesharshia did a third possibility in it. He wasn't going to give malchus for it. On the other hand, he doesn't want to say that it's openly mutter, because you don't want people to get careless. Yohiv le pruta l'tinik nachri, he would give a pruta to a goyish child, v'zorale, and then he'd have the goyish child plant the krus for him. So at least that way, like, he's making a shinui. So the question is, why dafka a goyish kid? V'litin le l'tinik yisrael, why not give it to a Jewish kid instead? And the answer is, osi l'misrach, because if you give it to a Jewish kid, he may continue in that habit when he gets older. And then when he's older, then already you have an Isser involved, at least Dirabanan, and therefore you don't want that. Well, maybe that also, you can say that a rabbi gave me, right. But the point is, in other words, at least when he gets older, he may continue to do the same kind of thing. Actually, Tosfos points out, we don't always say that kind of thing. For example, you have, if there's a bris on Yom Kippur, the din is, Tosfos brings an opinion. What do you do with the cup of wine from the bris milah? You give it to a kid who's too young to fast. What about the osi l'misrach? Tosfos says, because a bris on Yom Kippur is not common enough. You're not going to have the kid years later who's going to say, you know what, I'm allowed to drink on Yom Kippur because one time I drank by a bris on Yom Kippur. It's not a common enough thing that it's going to be. But over here, this is a common enough thing. So the question is, again, why that? Fine, that explains why not a Jewish kid, but v'litin le gadol nachri, why not a goyish adult, why dafka a goyish kid? The reason is osi le chlufi b'Yisrael, because it may be confused with an adult Jew, meaning people who see the goy planting kshus in the vineyard may think that he's a yid. Apparently in those times, goyim and Jews didn't dress that differently, and therefore you can easily confuse them. So like this, you give it to a little Jewish kid, the worst that could happen is people will think it's a Jewish kid, but even a Jewish kid, the only problem is Osi LeMizrach, and therefore that's far away enough that a Mesharshia, that's far away enough that a Mesharshia figured there's not a problem with that. Okay. Going back to the questions of the people of Bashker, the third question was mess, was about a dead person on Yom Tov, are you allowed to bury them? Shalach lahu, so he sent them back the message, Rabbi Menashia, mes lois askabu lo Yehudin v'lo Yamoyin, neither Jews nor Goyim are allowed to be involved with burying this person, loy be Yom Tov Rishon v'loy be Yom Tov Sheni, not on the first day of Yom Tov, not on the second. So again, the Gemara asks, Eini, is that so? V'omer Rabbi Yehuda bashilas omer avasi, Uvda Hava Bebek Knishta de Moin. It happened once in the Shul of Moin, a city in Eretz Yisrael, the Yom Tov Asamoch L'Shabbos, where Yom Tov was right next to Shabbos. What does it mean right next to? V'lo Yadayna Imel Faneo Imel Acharea. I don't know, he says, Rav Asi says, whether it was the day before, whether Yom Tov was on Friday or whether Yom Tov was on Sunday. Now, what's the difference? Rashi explains, If we say that Yom Tov was on Friday, then what it is why would we be asking whether we can bury him on that day? Because otherwise, you're going to have to wait until Friday and Shabbos. You're going to have to wait two whole days before you can bury him. Or if we say that Yom Tov was on Sunday, what may have happened is that it's not the mess died on Yom Tov itself on Sunday. The person died on Shabbos. And again, you have the problem. The body is already starting to decay. So anyway, so that was the situation one way or the other. Also the Kamei Rabbi Yochanan. So they came to Rabbi Yochanan to ask what to do. And he said to them, since it's the first day of Yom Tov, or actually if this was in Eretz Yisrael, it's the only day in Eretz Yisrael, you only have one day of Yom Tov, whatever. He said, Yis'asku be'am momin, Goyim can be involved in digging the grave and burying him and whatever. And Rava said, in fact, the din is, mess be Yom Tov Rishon Yis'asku be'am momin. If you have a mess on the first day of Yom Tov, you can have Goyim do the burial. Be Yom Tov Sheni Yis'asku be'am Yisrael. If it's on the second day of Yom Tov, then you can have Jews being involved with the burial. Va'afilu be Yom Tov Sheni Shel Rosh Hashanah. That's true, even if we're talking about the second day of Rosh Hashanah, where usually Rosh Hashanah, we say, is Yom Ha'arichter. It's considered like one long day. But for this purpose, the Chachamim are matter it, because of covering a mess. Mashenkin bebeitza, as opposed to with an egg, it's not like that. As we know that if an egg is laid on one day of Yom Tov, on a weekday day of Yom Tov, that is, then you're allowed to eat the egg the next day, because you're allowed to have a chana from one day of Yom Tov to the next. But Rosh Hashanah not, because it's considered Yom Ha'arichta. But when it comes to a mess, we're saying we're makel on the second day of Rosh Hashanah. So again, the answer is Lafisha Einim Bnei Torah. Again, the answer is the people of Bashka were not Bnei Torah. And if you allow them such things, then they're going to get careless with other things. Now, the truth is, it's actually not so simple. This din about mes b'yom tov rishon yis'asku by a woman and b'yom tov sheni yis'asku by Yisrael. First of all, according to the way Rashi is explaining the sugya over here, it comes out the heter is only if the person died on that day. The heter is only if the person died a day or two before, and therefore you're going to have a problem. You're going to leave the body around. It's going to start decaying or already decayed or whatever. Then you have a heter to be mechalo yom tov on the first day by telling the goy to do, or on the second day, or on the second day by having Jews do them themselves. But if they're according to Rashi, it would come out that if the person passed away on that day and there's no problem of keeping the body from spoiling, and nowadays, of course, there isn't because you just put them in the morgue, then you wouldn't necessarily have the heter to do that. There's also a good deal of discussion, for example, when we say that Jews can do it on the second day of Yom Tov, does that mean only if there are no Goyim available? Or does it mean if there are Goyim available, then you should still have them do that rather than having a Yid do it? And what exactly are they allowed to do on the second day of Yom Tov if Yid are allowed to do it? Tosfos over here brings a very interesting point, though, also in this connection. What, first of all, Tosfos brings from a Gemara and Beitza that said there developed a problem later on in the times of the Amoraim, where you had the Chavri, you had the Goyish authorities, who if they saw Jews doing Malacha on Yom Tov to bury a mess, they would take view. Look at that. So the Jews are allowed to do Malacha on their holidays. So let's have them do other work for the government. So the Gemara mentions of the Ravina says that we have to be careful not to have Jews bury a person on the second day of Yom Tov in order not to cause that kind of problem where the Goyim are going to think that then they can have us do any kind of work for them on Yom Tov. So Tosfos brings in that connection. One time it happened, there was a city in France called Melun, where there was a Yidu had passed away, and they buried him on Yom Tov, and actually Tosfos says they had to bury him outside the Tchum, and some people rode on horses to go to Levaya. And Tosfos said Rabbeinu Tam was very angry at all of them, everybody who went, even the ones who went on foot, because they're going outside the Tchum after all, and they're going uninvolved with the burial. And he wrote them a letter. What's going on over here? The people of Bashko are not Bnei Torah. You think you people of Meluna are Bnei Torah? So what's actually, there's a half a dozen different explanations among later Rishonim and Achronim, what exactly was Rabbeinu Tam's problem with what they did. If we're saying over here that B'yom Tov Sheni, Yisasku by Yisrael, so what's the problem? So there's a lot of explanations. One of them is, again, that maybe Rabbeinu Tam held like Rashi's Shitta, that the Heter is only for a mess that died on the day before, or 2 days before, or whatever, whereas here the mess had died on that day, and therefore Rabbeinu Tam held, there's no Heter to be Mechal or Yom Tov for it. Or maybe, again, it's based on that Gemara in Beitza that nowadays we have to be concerned because the Goyim may get the wrong impression about what we're allowed to do on Yom Tov or not allowed to do on Yom Tov and then force Jews to work for them on Yom Tov. And then there's a lot of other possibilities, one of them being, again, there might have been Goyim available and therefore why should you have Jews do it? Or another one is, fine, maybe they had to do the funeral on Yom Tov, maybe they had a heter to do it, but not that so many people should go. You would have had, in that case, Rabbeinu Tam would have been fine, let's say, if they had the minimum number of people that are needed for the Levaya to go. But to have all the people go like that, and the Befrat, some of them are going on horses, that we're saying not. So actually, a couple of these opinions are brought in Shulchan Aruch as far as the actual practical halachas of what to do as far as a mess on Yom Tov. Practically speaking, as far as I know, nowadays in general they don't. I mean, again, nowadays they have morgues and whatnot. They're able to keep the body until after Yom Tov and just bury it, and then therefore that's the better thing to do. This is also true. It's not covered on mess to have a goy do it, if possible, right? And actually, it brings in Shulchan Aruch. Part of it is, right? Because it is covered on mess to bury him as soon as possible, sure. But it's also covered on mess not to have Yom Tov be desecrated on his behalf. So, yeah. So that's a consideration also, yeah. Okay. Getting back further to the matter of Akilah, Amr of Oven Barav Huna, Amr of Chama Barguya, Misatif Adam Mekilo of Kaskasera. Up until now, we've been talking about the kilo, the canopy. We're talking about in terms of spreading it over the bed. But it's a piece of cloth. A person could also use it to wrap themselves in. A person is allowed to wrap themselves on Shabbos in this kilo, like a garment, like a talus, with its Kaskasera, with the straps that are hanging off the ends of it, where usually when you set it up as a kila, you put those over the frame above the bed to hold it in place. You're allowed to do that. The yotzel or shasadam b'shamas, you're allowed to then wear it outside to shasadam on Shabbos. The eni choshish, and there's no problem of carrying because the ritzuas are the ritzuas basically are bottled to the kila. Like this, you're not. They're not serving a function right now. You don't need them in order to wrap yourself around. But nevertheless, they're bottled to the kila, and therefore you're allowed. So the question is, Maishna mihot mid Rav Huna, why is this different than a din that Rav Huna says? The Amar Rav Huna Amar Rab, Hayotze b'talus she'en mitziyetzes kilchos of a Shabbos chayev chatos. If a person goes out on Shabbos with a talus that does not have proper tzitzis on it, he's chayev chatos. And we don't say that the possible tzitzis or the incomplete tzitzis or whatever are bottled to the beged. So why should we say over here that straps are bottled to the kila? The difference is, that's exactly the difference. Tzitzis lagabe talus chashivi v'leibati. The difference is tzitzis relative to the talus are important and therefore they're not bottled. As opposed to hani lechashivi v'leibati, as opposed to the straps are not so choshuv and therefore they're bottled. What do we mean that the tzitzis are particularly choshuv? Rashi explains because tzitzis in those times had tchelis in them. Tchelis is very expensive stuff. So therefore you're not going to be mevatel it so easily. Tosfos gives a different explanation from Rabbeinu Hananel that even without tchelis, tzitzis are choshuv because you have in mind eventually that you are going to put proper tzitzis on it. You're not just going to, you have, let's say there's only three tzitzis on it right now. You're not going to just leave it that way indefinitely. Eventually, you're going to keep those three tzitzis and add a fourth one. So the ones that are on there now are considered choshuv because you do intend to fix them or to add to them later. So Tosfos points out in this connection, for example, you have, for example, a kind of belt which also has, it's called in English a garter belt, where you have things that hang down from the belt that are used to hold up your socks. So what Tosfos says, by the same token, even if you're not actually wearing socks and you have those suspenders or whatever hanging down from it, you'd be allowed because, again, they'd be bottle. They're not so choshev. They're not as choshev as tzitzis, and therefore they'd be bottle. But this whole question, though, about wearing the kilo or wearing tzitzis or whatever is very negeya as far as the question. When you have sometimes a piece of clothing, you have, let's say, for example, extra buttons, sometimes shirts, sometimes have extra buttons sewn onto them so that if you lose a button, then you'll be able to replace it with one of those. You have sometimes a loop or a zipper or whatever on clothing, which is broken. You have, for example, you get back clothing from the dry cleaners and it has a tag attached to it. All of this is very negayah to those kinds of questions, whether you're allowed to wear it on Shabbos. So the tag, fine, for example, is not choshuv, so therefore you might be allowed to go out with it on Shabbos. But let's say, for example, the broken zipper or the loose button or whatever, lav davka, because it really depends. For example, according to Rashi, that it's just a matter of tchelas. Okay, those things aren't tchelas. But according to Tosfos, that's a matter of whether you plan to fix it or not. You do plan to fix those things. Yeah. Okay. Now we're going to get, okay, so now we got into the matter of Akila itself was kind of a digression from the topic of our perek, because we started by talking about hanging up the meshameres, the wine strainer, putting it over the keli in order to strain wine through it, and then we talked in that connection about making other kinds of temporary oilim, for example, Akila. So now we're going to get back to the matter of the strainer itself. Amar Rava Baravona, marim adam ala meshameres biyam. Now we said, in the Mishnah we said Rabbi Eliezer says you're allowed to hang up the Meshameres on Yom Tov and strain wine through it. The Chum said he can't, but if it was hung up before Yom Tov, then you are allowed to strain wine through it on Yom Tov. So Rabbi Bar Avuna says, on Yom Tov, what you can do is Marim Adam on the Meshameres be Yom Tov. A person can play a trick regarding the Meshameres on Yom Tov. Because after all, we said the reason why it was also, we said, is not really because of oil arai. The reason was because of uvdin dechoil, because it's acting like you do on weekdays, and you might come to do what you usually do on weekdays and strain. So you're allowed to, like this, you're hanging it up, you're playing a trick, you're pretending that you're putting it up for some other purpose, litlis bodrimonim, where you're saying that you're putting it up in order to hang pomegranates in it, v'toilah bashmarim, and then you're allowed to actually put dregs of wine in it and strain. Because you're saying that you didn't put it up to begin with in order for that purpose. You put it up for a different purpose in order to use it as a bag to hang Rimonim in. Amravashi, Vahuda Tola Bar Rimonim. But Ravashi says that only works if first you put Rimonim in it. So you'd have to put up the Meshameres, put some Rimonim in it, and then after a while you take out the Rimonim and pour in the dregs of the wine. So the Gemara says, my Shnah Mehodatanya. Why is that different than a case that we learn in a Braisa? Matilin Sheikha Bamoyed Latsarach Amoyed. You're allowed to make beer on Chol HaMoed. You're allowed to brew beer on Chol HaMoed, where you're going to be drinking it on Chol HaMoed itself. Shaloy Latsarach HaMoed also, but if you're doing it in order to keep for after Chol HaMoed, then it's also. Echad Sheikha Tmarim Ve'echad Sheikha Sa'arim. This applies whether you're making beer out of dates, which was the usual kind of beer they had in those days, or whether you're making beer out of barley, which is the usual kind we have nowadays. And Alpha Pisha Yeshlahen Yoshan, and the din is even if you already have an old stock of beer, you're still allowed to, and Lechora, what you would do is you would drink your old beer over Chol HaMoed, and then you're planning to save the new batch of beer for afterwards. You're allowed to make a Harama, Marim B'Shoisim in a Chodesh, you play a trick. And you drink the new stuff, and then you say, in other words, I'd prefer the new beer right now, and therefore you're making it letzarech Chol HaMoed. So we see, in other words, that you don't even need a hechacha, you don't need a proof. You're allowed to do a harama without clearly showing. Without clearly showing, you can say, in other words, I need a new batch of beer in order to drink. So we see that even without actually drinking from it, it's mutter. So by the same token over here, why do you need to actually hang Rimonim in the Meshameres? The difference is, Hosam le mucha milsa, hocham mucha milsa. The difference is there, it's not so obvious that he's doing a harama because not everybody knows that he has an old batch of beer. As far as people know, he's completely out of beer and therefore he's making more. Mashenkin over here, it's obvious when a person puts on a Meshameres, most of the time, why are they doing it? In order to strain wine through it. In order to strain dregs of wine through it. So therefore, if he wouldn't first put Rimonim in, it would be too obvious that he put it up for the sake of straining wine. And that would be also. All right, so that's the difference. Okay. Amru, speaking of Haram, Amru le Rabbanon le Ravashi, the Chachamim one time said to Ravashi, Chazi mar hait surhum Rabbanon, Rebbe, look what's going on with this young Tamad Chacham, Rav Chiyun Shmei, his name is Rav Huna bar Rav Chiyun, V'amil Rav Huna bar Rav Chilavon Shmei, others say his name was Rav Huna bar Chilavon, the Shokil Borah de Tuma, he's doing various kinds of Haramas. He takes a clove of garlic, he puts it in the hole in a barrel of wine. So you usually have there's a hole in the side of a barrel of wine to be able to get out to be able to get out wine from it. And afterwards you stop it up with some kind of stopper to keep all the wine from pouring out. So he now to put in an actual stopper in there would be a problem on Shabbos because then you're being misakin kli, you're fixing the keli. But what he does is he takes a clove of garlic and he puts it into the hole over there, which is a harama, v'omar, and he says, if anybody sees him, well, what are you doing with that? He says, lots newer, kama chavina. I just mean, I need some place to put this clove of garlic away, and this happened to be a convenient place. Meanwhile, though, he's actually doing it in order to close up the barrel. Apparently, it doesn't ruin the wine, I don't know. And also v'noim b'mabra, another thing this Rav Huna bar Chiyun or bar Chilavon does, is he goes to sleep on a ferry, and meanwhile, while he's asleep over there, the goyish ferryman takes the ferry across the river. Now, you're not allowed to go on a boat. You're not allowed to go on a boat and cross a river on Shabbos, even if it's within the tchum. So this Tamad Chacham goes and sleeps on the ferry, even though he knows at some point the ferryman is going to start up the engines and start going and go across the river. So he manages to get across to the other side of the river, and check over his fruit or his produce or whatever that's growing over there and make sure everything is good. And he says, if you ask him, you crossed the river on Shabbos, what do you mean? I just meant to take a nap. I didn't know the guy is going to take the boat across. So how is he allowed to do such things? Amalahu. So Ravashi answers them, Harama Kamrad. So you're talking about there's a problem of Harama over here. There's a problem that he's playing a trick over here. He's doing something where he's claiming he's doing it for one purpose and really he's doing it for a different purpose. That's not a big deal. Harama bedrabbanonhi. It's only a Harama in things that are also drabbanon. Because after all, even if he did actually put the garlic in there, take in order to close up the barrel, it wouldn't be considered boino, makvapatish, or what have you, because it's not the actual thing, that's not like a piece of wood that's meant to go in there. And the same thing with the river. Crossing a river is only osim midrabanon. But surva midrabanon, like osim lemeve lahatchila, a tamat chacham like that is not going to end up doing the whole reason why harama is also, because he might end up doing it without the harama. A tamat chacham is not prone to do such a thing, and therefore he's allowed to do the harama. Harama means playing a trick where he's doing it for one purpose. He's putting the garlic in there, for example, actually in order to close up the barrel, but he's pretending that he's doing it just in order to hide it over there. And the same thing with the ferry. So in other words, if he were to actually put the garlic in there and say, I'm doing it in order to close up the barrel, that wouldn't be harama. That would be doing an issur straight out. That can't be allowed. But like this, where he's claiming that he's doing it in order to put it in there, so that's allowed. Actually, in Shulchan Aruch, it mentions that you have a machloikas or rishonim, whether with that one do you even need, is that particular heter only for a Tamad Chacham or for anybody? Maybe once we say the harama is mutter, maybe that particular one is mutter for everybody, because it's not usual to use a clove of garlic for that kind of thing. As opposed to the case of the ferry, there, taka, you would have that only a Tamad Chacham is. We're talking about he did it on Shabbos or on Yom Tov itself. If he did it before, obviously you can put whatever you want into the hole before Yom Tov. Okay. Mishnah says, "Noisnin mayim algabia shmorim b'shvil sheyitzolu." You are allowed to, if you have the shmorim, the dregs of the wine, are in the meshamera, so in the strainer before Yom Tov, before Shabbos, you're allowed to pour water over them in order for them to get more clarified. What happens is you pour water over them, and the water goes through it; it filters through the dregs over there and takes out more of the wine that's in there. So you're allowed to do that on Shabbos because not boira, because you put in good, we put in clean water to begin with. The fact that it filters through and takes out some of the wine from the dregs is not considered boira. Umasanan nasayayin besudrin, you're also allowed to strain wine on Shabbos, besudrin, with a scarf or a cloth or whatever, over kfifa mitzvahs, or with a wicker basket, a basket that's made out of, Rashi says, out of tsurei dekel, out of strips from a palm tree or whatever. So you're allowed to strain wine through that, because it's a shinui. You actually have a machloikas rishonim. Are we talking about, now you have some kinds of wines that are very full of stuff or whatever, very full of dregs or other kinds of things, those, and you can't even drink them without straining. Those, for sure, you can't do anything with on Shabbos. Then you have, at the opposite extreme, you have ones that are fairly clean, and you just have maybe like tiny little things in them that most people wouldn't be makbid on. And then you have in-between ones. What are we talking about in the Mishnah over here? Are we talking about the in-between ones, or are we talking about dafka, the ones that are fairly clear? It's machlokes between the Rashba and the Rambam. How good a filter, yeah. You're also allowed to put an egg into a mustard strainer. So Rashi says two explanations. One is that it means you're straining mustard seeds, that is, through a sifter that you use for the purpose. You put an egg in there. What happens is the egg yolk goes through the holes of the thing. The egg white stays up on top with the psoilus. And you're allowed to do that on Shabbos because, as the Gemara is going to say later, you're doing it only for the color. You're not really doing it as a matter of burr. You don't really particularly care to separate the egg and the white, the yolk and the white. You're just doing it in order to give the mustard a nice yellow color. The other explanation Rashi says is it's not involving mustard at all. You're using the mustard sifter as a thing to use to separate an egg, to separate a white and a yolk of an egg, and you're allowed to do that on Shabbos. Because not considered bur, again, because both the white and the yolk are edible, and it's not, so it's not really psoilus mitoch oichel or oichel mitoch psoilus. The oisin a noimlin b'Shabbos, and another din is you're allowed to make a noimlin on Shabbos, which we're going to discuss in the Gemara tomorrow. A noimlin is a mixture of wine, honey, and pepper. So you're allowed to make such a mixture on Shabbos. Rabbi Yehuda says, not like the Tanakhama that you can just make however you want. But Shabbos, because on Shabbos, you can only make it by the cupful, one cupful at a time. The Yomtev, belogin. Yomtev, you're allowed to make it a bottle full at a time. Or the Moed, b'chavis. On Chol HaMoed, you can make it a barrel full at a time. Rabbi Tzadik says, I agree that there's a limit, but the limit is actually how many guests you have. If you have a lot of guests, even on Shabbos, you can make a whole barrel full, let's say. As long as you're making it for that soda right now, right? Okay. So we'll start to a couple of lines of the Gemara. Amar of Zehiri, Noisnin Adam, Yayin Tzolo, Lamayim Tzolo, Masaycham, Shameras, Meshabbos, Ve'ena Choshesh. A person is allowed to pour clear wine or clear water into a Meshameras on Shabbos, and there's no problem. And in other words, it's clear. So again, one way of looking at it is we're talking about it's fairly clear, but there's still little things in it, and you're allowed to, because most people would drink it that way. The other way of looking at it is we're talking about it's very clear, but still, some people like to filter it even more. Aval achurin loy, but not if it's cloudy. So the Gemara says, "Maseh Rav Shimon Gamliel loy." Tured adam chovas shoyayin yeno shmera. A person is allowed to mix up a barrel of wine, the wine and the dregs. V'noisin l'seicha meshameres b'Shabbos, and then pour the whole mixture into a meshameres on Shabbos. V'ene choishish, and there's no problem. So even though it's got dregs in it, you're still allowed to. The answer is Tirgum Ziri Ben Agitis Shanu. Ziri explains that's specifically talking about between the time during the times when they're pressing grapes to make wine. So everybody's wine at that point is cloudy and full of dregs or whatever, because only after the wine sits a while do those things fall to the bottom. So everybody at that point is drinking wine that has dregs in it. Therefore, it's back to the kind of thing. Everybody drinks it that way, and therefore you're the fact that you're filtering it, you're not doing something different. You're not trying to make it any better than anybody else, because you would be able to drink it otherwise as well. That's the key. The key difference is, would most people drink it that way? So why is he doing it? Because he himself is a little finicky and likes to have extra clear wine, but he's a little bit more of an istinist. So that would be allowed. This kind of thing, by the way, is very negeya as far as the question of water filters on Shabbos. Are you allowed to? Are you allowed to pour water through a water filter? Are you allowed? Another example they give is, are you allowed to pour tea out of a teapot that has a strainer on the top of it? So one thing is, one reason to say that's mutter is because many people will drink it that way without the filtering. Or even when you talk about water, let's say you have the water filters because of the bugs or whatever. The fact is, if it weren't for the issue of bugs, many people would drink it that way anyway. And therefore, it can be considered, according to many poskim achronim, that there's no problem with it because it would have been drinkable otherwise, as opposed to if you have, where it really is dirty, and most people wouldn't drink it that way, then taka, you're not allowed to filter it on Shabbos. Okay. Yeah.